I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Rock and Roll Podcast, which Grav just doesn't seem to do anymore. I actually heard a rumor that he doesn't think that women should legally even be allowed to play rugby, but like, take that with a pinch of salt. It's just a rumor, just what I heard on the grapevine. So once again, Rhiannon Guy Jones is here to fill his sparkly boots. Rhiannon, it is an absolute pleasure to have you back, as always.
Thank you. It's a delight to be back. Although I think in future I actually want a pair of sparkly boots like Grav, so I'm going to make that like my rider for the next time.
We'll get on that. And we were actually sort of sanctioned the last time we did an episode. We got hit with some sort of diversity quotas for being an all-women podcast. So because of woke, we've had to let a man come and join the podcast, which, look, I'm no more happy about it than any of you are, but I googled woke man and Will Owen's name was the first one that came up, so he's here as well. Hello, Will.
I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm woke now. What a shame. What a shame. But thank you for having me as the token man on this podcast. And by the way, please speak over me at any point.
Let's just hope that diversity doesn't drag down the high standards that Patricia and I have, you know, set previously.
Yeah. I assure you it will.
You know, I just question why we need diversity anyway. But here we are. Here we find ourselves.
Picking boxes.
With a man on a podcast. I don't really understand. I didn't think that this was a man job. I didn't think this was something that men did. Rhiannon, that's a question for you, actually. Do you sort of subscribe to the notion of some jobs being for men? Because, like, obviously we're all for, like, equality and stuff like that. But when my parents are like, oh, do you want to mow the lawn? I'm like, that is actually for men.
Good question. Only if it's something that I don't want to do.
Exactly. Thank you very much. That is exactly my point. So, like, our lane at the moment, like, our driveway for our house is, like, basically we have neighboring farmers using bits of our farm and there's tractors going up and down the whole time. It's like it's been hit with 17 nuclear missiles, right? It's like really, really bad. And we're after getting a load of stones to fill it in. And my younger brother's back from, he's on work placement in Spain and he's back this week. And they were like, oh, we'll do it this week. And anyway, it can't be done this week. So Jack was like, oh, you can do it. But, well, absolutely not. Look at my nails. Actually, my nails are far too long to do this. This is for men.
But actually, also, now that I think about it, still no. Like, I have a couple of friends who would identify as, like, studly lesbians, and they're also always very happy to do all of those, like, tasks if I say,
okay,
like, I need someone studly to do this for me because I don't want to do it. So actually, no, I don't think there are any jobs that men need to do. I think we could just get rid of them entirely. Yes, well, bye-bye.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I have no complaints. No arguments.
I'm actually really
on board
with. I'm actually really on board with bringing the bins down a lesbian job instead of a man job. That is actually way better.
Studly lesbian, crucial.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Interesting.
Friends, if you're listening.
Interesting. I have to get to know some studly lesbians now. It's like my homework for the week. Before the next time the bins need to go down. Because I fucking hate bringing the bins down.
Your life will improve demonstrably, I'll tell you now. Like, this is good homework.
Will, what about you?
What about me?
Do you like doing things like changing light bulbs and bringing the bins out and putting stones in holes?
God, no, that's a lesbian's job.
Cleaning the dishwasher?
It's a whatever I'm not job, okay? Look, if you say that's a man's job, then I'm not a man.
But then what the fuck did we get you on here for?
Because I hate men's rugby. And I'm
that is true.
I hate men's rugby.
There's actually no bigger hater of men's rugby than Will Owen. Like, you know, I don't know if Bill Beaumont knows this about you. I feel like your relationship would sour a little bit if he did. But
I like the values that come with rugby, whether it's played by men, women. Look, I think it's just really great for everyone that everyone can all play, that it's a game for everybody, that we can all play together. It's the sort of shit Bill Beaumont says.
I like how you couldn't make it to the end of the sentence.
No, not a chance.
I think we'll probably just go straight into talking about round two of the Women's Six Nations, because like there isn't any really news that I care about other than like Danny Kerr retired or something.
Can I please tell you this news from French rugby, because it is absolutely wild and I read like three different articles in French, which is very difficult for me.
Yeah, I mean, if we're bringing news, like that means that Grav has to put in the "this is the news" jingle, so that's fine. He has a bit of work to do now.
Even funnier. Okay.
He has that man job to do of editing this podcast.
Yes, that's a man job. Editing a podcast is definitely a man job. Béziers rugby club, Pro de Deux, thought that the like trademark for the club logo and all the associate like branding, colours, whatever, was done in like a 20-year cycle, and it turns out it's not. It's done in a 10-year cycle. So they just completely missed the renewal point for it, and it had just been left like available, right? And this woman just happened to stumble into the local patent office, she says, and just happened to realize it was available and just felt very strongly that she should protect it. So she took over like trademark for the Béziers Rugby Club logo. This includes the women's team as well. It's not entirely and anyway, so this then became news because she was like, well, you can continue to use the logo and the club colours and whatever, but I'm not going to give them back to you. And this woman was previously a local candidate for the Front National, which is the French way of saying National Front. So there were like some raised about this.
You're like fucking Duolingo.
The owl's been on my fucking back. Anyway, so this made some news and everyone was like, this is interesting and a bit embarrassing for the club and a bit suspicious and what the hell is going on? And then it turns out that the club supporters logo had exactly the same thing. Only this time it was a random man who'd stumbled into the patent office and just happened to realise that the supporters club logo was also available. And he had previously wanted to use their trademark for the coffee cups for the cafe he owns in the town. So he was like, cool, well, since I just happened to be here and it happens to be free, I'm happened to take the trademark myself. I think this is correct so far. And then it turns out that he just happens to be the president of the regional Front National political party, which now has a new name. There's a lot of like name branding things going on here. So now a news article has come out about this, and the mayor of the town, a Frenchman whose name is, I think, Robert Ménard. Fuck off, Duolingo, I don't care about my French pronunciation. He's the mayor of the town, and the town just happens to currently own the rugby club of Béziers because, I don't know, there was some, like, going out of business thing going on. And he is a political opponent of the Front National, and now he's accusing them of both of these people of blackmail. I don't know what the fuck is happening, actually. Like, I spent 40 minutes reading French trying to work this out and trying to ask someone who knows better than me.
But the town are beefing, basically.
There is some major, major beef going down in the rugby town of Béziers.
You have to question if rugby is really worth it, to be honest.
I mean, I have a lot of questions for all of the people involved. Why don't you simply get alive and watch the fucking like, team play? That would be my
We were all question. In France in, you know, September and October, and none of us thought to go to Béziers and do like an investigative sort of piece
none
on
of,
this.
None of us just happened to stumble into a trademark patient in office and just happened to look up some random brands and then, you know, acquire them.
What no, a waste. I like how nobody in that story was in Béziers on purpose. Everyone just happened to be
just
there.
Happened to be there. So anyway, the Rugby Club Béziers might have to change its name now because it's so administratively foolish slash the political shenanigans of rugby, because you can't separate sport and politics no matter how much you want to try, mean that it might now have a new name pretty soon so that they aren't associated with these other people who now own
just going to call it Béziers 2 and then just keep going. Yeah.
Pro de Béziers de
Béziers. How about Béziers? So it's like phonetic.
I think there's a lot of opportunity for what they could do. Anyway, I think they're doing quite badly in the Pro de Deux. there's perhaps a relationship between what is going on off the pitch and on the pitch.
What a sad end to the story. Like, you really wanted them to sort of be getting promoted to the top 14 and then just not even have a name when they get there. Just have a question mark as their logo, like the fucking Riddler or something.
Not found.
I think a question mark logo would be fucking great, actually.
And today we have Toulouse against 404 Error.
Like, you know when someone blocks you, they're like Facebook user or something. It's like yeah. that's just like top 14 rugby team yeah. in the league.
It's like in a video game when they didn't get the rights.
Yeah.
Oh they're my god, related. Rugby 24 is being postponed again because
no way.
Rights, I assume. Maybe someone else happened upon a trademark office and happened to trademark some things they needed. Why is everybody in rugby so fucking shit?
Everyone in men's rugby.
I wouldn't men's rugby because there's too many men involved.
Indeed.
Anyway, I think this is a story to pay attention to. And by pay attention to, I mean I'm going to keep following James Harrington on Twitter, who understands all of this much better than me. And if you're listening and I butchered the story, James, I'm really sorry. Je suis très désolé.
Well, I look forward to bringing weekly Béziers updates
I will happily be the like... The Bézier correspondent. Like, I'll just send you an update before every podcast recording, even if Grab.
What's their name this week?
How do you say 404 in French? Cat.
Oh, don't even.
Cat?
Well, cat.
Cats on cat. Interesting.
Yeah, that'll do.
Homework for me.
That was good.
That was terrifying because I haven't spoken French. Well, I spoke French in September,
I still
October,
have
but I haven't learned French since
French.
I was in school. There's just so many French people in France, right? It's just a
right?
lot.
There are too many French people in France, arguably.
I hate the
diversity's
fact that, like,
gone too far. They let French people be there, and it was just
honestly. The fact that you just get on a plane to France, and then suddenly everyone starts going like, "Oh, bonjour to you!" Like you're going to know what that means.
I'm not that Irish abroad person who like needs everything to be like it is here when I go anywhere else. Like I'm really not, but when Ireland were playing in the World Cup, I was like, oh my God, there's people here who sound like me. And then when I flew back to Ireland for a day, like while I was in France for the World Cup, and there was obviously French people on the flight because it was a flight from Paris to Dublin. And then we were all on the bus into Dublin City. And I was like, why the fuck are there people talking French here? Like, as soon as you're removed from that environment, it was really, really like unnerving to have people speak French. I was like, you are in my country now. Speak the language that we speak here.
Stop it. It's similar. I don't like going like back to the UK because obviously that usually means I have to be in England and that's terrible. But I do really like sometimes just putting on Rugby League to listen to all the accents. Like, it makes me feel at home, even like.
Yeah, I know what you
mean. Absolute diabolical.
Yeah, it's just so. Sometimes, you know, I don't feel homesick, but sometimes I've just had enough of like Danish stuff and then I'll just put the Rugby League on and I'm like, oh.
Right. Not only is this not even the right code of rugby, it's definitely not the Women's Six Nations. So I think that could sort of pivot back to that because we have round two of the Women's Six Nations coming up this weekend. Round one, I thought like really interesting across the board. And I think the matchups, maybe not England Wales. Because it's like a different sort of game when any team plays England. But
yeah,
the
Wales
other two
are gonna
games,
win by such a margin, yeah.
It's so uncompetitive in the way that Wales are just going to batter them that it is like it almost becomes uninteresting. But I think the other two games in the context of what happened last weekend like are worth paying attention to. I think that there's some really compelling stuff coming up. So I think we start with Scotland, France, isn't that right? Is that the first game? In Scotland. And what did we make of, like, if we start with Scotland, Will, I know you were at that game, and I know you're probably not as keen to talk about it. Scotland beating Wales. I think we spoke last week about how, like, Scotland and Wales sort of have become this rivalry over the last few years. It's sort of sprung out of nowhere in the women's game, where you're just, anytime Scotland play Wales, you just sort of, oh, this is going to be close, and this is going to be a really good game. And Scotland sort of got on top. It was the first time they won in... Was it the first time ever they've won in Cardiff? Or was it the first time
in the Six Nations?
Yeah. I knew, because I know they said when I was watching that it was the first time ever, and then a different time they said it was the first time in like X number of years or whatever. So I wasn't sure like what the stat actually was.
But I think there was like a friendly win, but it's not not a competitive game. Yeah.
What do we make of Scotland in the context of like Wales's performance? Like, how do we rate Scotland after game one? Because it's still sort of kind of hard sometimes to gauge where these teams are, because we don't see them play as much as we are sort of forced to watch men's rugby teams play.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's weird because on one hand, I'm going to be really like biased and view that whole game from a real Welsh perspective. So I feel like I'm going to really underrate Scotland here. But nothing can quantify the momentum they've got of winning 8 games on the trot now, is it? Like, they are in such a winning environment. 7 games on the trot, yeah. They're in such a winning environment. Like,
he's already decided they're going to beat France and it's going to be 8. So.
yeah. And with that, they've clearly, like, inherently learned how to manage games. Like, Helen Nelson was really good against Wales on the weekend. Like, really, like, grabbed that game by the scruff when needed to, especially when Wales, like, threatened to get back into the game. And that took 50 whole minutes of, like, from my perspective as a Welsh fan, Wales just not playing the game of rugby for, like, 50 minutes, then going in the last half hour, yeah, we might as well. We might as well give it a go, like. But the Scottish backline is, again, like, I don't think we know just how good they are. We don't know how good their ceiling is. And that's a really good thing for them, because they looked so confident on the weekend against Wales. Like, Emma Orr's finally becoming the player that we all thought that she would be, that everyone's always gone like, oh yeah, she's unbelievable in training, like unbelievably talented and so on. And it's taken a couple of years for her to reach that point where she's doing that consistently in games. But yeah, nothing can quantify just like how sky high the confidence of that backline is.
I think there's kind of nothing they can't do, which is a little bit terrifying, because it hasn't come out of nowhere. I think we sort of say sometimes like that it's come out of nowhere. It obviously hasn't, because they've won 7 games. It's been like a year in the making. And then obviously prior to that, there's so much that goes into the making of like when they start winning those games. And you think like they won away in Wales, going home to a home crowd. Like, like, are we sort of losing our heads a bit about Scotland, or are we looking at Scotland as, you know, are they going to keep that winning run? Because it's really interesting, especially against a France team who I didn't feel were anywhere near their best at the weekend.
I think something that I thought was really interesting about the Wales vs Scotland game and then going into the Scotland vs France game is that, like, Wales have used their professionalism to focus on fitness and the pack, and that's where they've been good, and now they're kind of clearly trying to roll out a stage 2 of bringing the back line into it, and that's obviously the approach that they thought was like the best kind of balance of all the competing factors. And, like, you know, we talk all the time about how many different competing factors there are when you're like professionalizing a team. And Scotland have obviously done it differently. I don't want to give them too much credit for like the foresight there, but like, they, for a long time, I think they've had really talented backs and obviously talented forwards who just didn't have enough professionalism to make the difference, I guess. And now it looks like they do. So then they have both, like, and they have a much more coherent team, not just in terms of like the players know each other and they're used to playing with each other, like the standard of fitness and ability is quite consistent across the front and the back. And that I think makes them really dangerous, actually. Like on paper, I think France are better and France are definitely favourites. But I don't know that it's not just the winning run, although I think you're right, Will, that that's like, it is really hard to quantify that kind of
momentum. I don't think it is quantifiable. Like it is something that sounds really wishy-washy, but it does make a difference. Like
it does make a difference, especially combined with all the other things, like especially off the back of a losing run and with more professionalism and being taken more seriously at a time when like the women's game is just up and up and up, like that wider mentality is a huge kind of thing, actually. And it won't win them a game on its own, but it could so easily be like a point of difference in an otherwise tight game. And I think France are just much more like, yeah, we have all this talent and we have this all of this depth, but we're still kind of in a lot of ways in the same place we've been for like 4 or 5 years of like one of the best, but not really leaping forwards, not really huge like shifts in terms of the level of professionalization maybe for the squad. And yeah, like I wouldn't want to, if I had to bet, I would bet on France, but I would not enjoy being made to bet on France. And I think Scotland should back themselves to do it. Definitely.
I think they will. To be honest,
I think they will. Yeah,
I think a huge part of it is that backing themselves, and I think that they've sort of, whether by accident or not, because I think that we are like, there's still, you can't give too much credit to unions still, especially like up here. You know, like it's what they're doing is, any success that they have seems to be by accident, essentially. But they have ended up in a position, Scotland, where they do seem to have genuine depth, and they're not in a position where like sort of 50 minutes into a game the standard will drop dramatically because the starting players have started flagging and the players the next level down are just not, like, they're not there. I think the Celtic challenge for Wales and Scotland was great for that, because they were able to sort of bring through a next level and have them actually play some games in a way that Ireland couldn't do with the Celtic challenge. So I think that they've ended up sort of, it feels like they took a step forward sort of between, I know that the WXV was there, but between last year's Six Nations and this year's Six Nations.
I mean, if you think that Scotland didn't have Fran McGee, who was incredible last year, and had Chloe Rolle on the bench.
Were
still like...
And that's Meryl Smith's first test at fullback as well. And she looked just completely used to it there. Like this weekend as well. They've lost Lana Skeldon and Sarah Bonner both due to injury. Mm. Even just a year ago, you look at that and you go, they're completely screwed. That's two of their best players gone. But now they've
and
got
they're
like
already
Louise
missing
McMillan.
Jade Conkle Smith as well. Like
Like Louise McMillan stepping up, who's really good. Alice Martin, like huge work rate on her.
Love Alice Martin.
Yeah, like those are two huge replacements to bring in. So they look completely comfortable. Otherwise, they've gone completely unchanged. Which is, again,
and
just
also,
the kind
like,
of confidence they have.
Evie Gallagher was so upsettingly good last week.
Like, they looked like they could score whenever they wanted. Like, I know that they didn't. Like, they scored sort of early on, and then it sort of didn't stall, but, like, the game changed, I suppose.
But I think it just
looked like if they had really, really felt like it, they could have scored. Like, it was... It might be like not the right comparison, but it almost felt like watching England play at times, like that inevitability, let me try that word again, of the fact that they were going to score when they had the ball. That's what it felt like at times. And like, obviously then they didn't score every time, but like they were breaking the line so easily that you were just like, I know that Wales had by their own standards a poor performance, but it looked like, you know, they could be an issue for any team. If they played like
I mean,
that.
I think Scotland felt like they, I mean, I know it was really close, like really close at the end, but like Scotland kind of felt like they had a little bit more in the tank and Wales didn't. But also I think it's not so much that Wales didn't show up, it's that Scotland played in a way that made Wales play badly. Like,
100%. They silenced us.
Yeah. Like, it is one of those things, actually, where, like, they outplayed us, and they outplayed us in such a way that we couldn't... Like, basically, they were like, yeah, if we neutralise the pack, yeah, you don't have enough to win a game. And like, so they just neutralised... Or not neutralised the pack, but, you know, like, they were just so competitive in that area and that, yeah, that Wales then just couldn't do what they do well.
I think so.
Like, Scotland won by being better.
The 18 points that Wales scored was just a result of them being quite a good team, you know, and it was like
if we'd have won that game, don't get me wrong, I would have gleefully rubbed it into all of my Scottish friends. Like, yeah. I would have been obnoxious.
But it would have been a robbery, though.
It would have been a dick. Scotland scored their 20 points by playing better than Wales, you know.
Yeah. It wouldn't have just been an armed robbery. It would have been a
Wales are not suddenly a bad team or by any means. Like, and they haven't gone back. Well, like, they haven't gone backwards, I don't think, because they lost a narrow game at home. But if we look at France, like, are France rusty or have they stalled? Because I was watching that game, and like, I am obviously the first to not have a huge amount of faith in Ireland, but as the game went on, I was kind of like, but hang on, it was what, 10-0 or something at halftime, or 12-3 or something, and it felt strange, and Ireland hadn't really fired a shot, but at the same time they were stopping all of France's shots except for when Pauline Bourdon-Sansus decided to be absolute bullshit. And it was like, is this a team who are just having their first run out in a few months and are sort of feeling things out, like some new players, etc.? Or have they sort of stalled in that sort of, they've always been in that like top four bracket, it feels like. Because women's rugby, you feel like you have the four and then you have like five or six more and then you have everyone else. But I wonder, are they sort of towing that line now?
I think... this sounds really lazy because it is a comparison to the men's team, but I think it's...
Boo. This,
yeah, but I don't mean it like...
I didn't know they had a men's team.
Not very good.
Are they any good?
Oh, wait. I know Antoine Dupont plays rugby, but otherwise...
Johnny Bridge,
He plays the Sevens.
So like traditionally, I think the French women team are, it's not which team is going to show up. They're always going to be good.
Mm.
But I wonder if there's a mental thing of like, it says a lot that the best games I remember France watching the last few years, like full games, have been against New Zealand.
Yeah.
And the best 40 minutes I've seen them play have either been against New Zealand or England. And I think they are a real occasion team.
And they then haven't won quite a lot of those games as well. That's the thing. Like, they play these great games and then seem to come up short. Like, that's unfair. But
they've beaten New Zealand a lot, but they just didn't beat them the one time they really had to.
No, and
they pushed England a lot, but didn't.
Yeah, and I think that I wonder if there was an element of, maybe not complacency, but an element of like, look, we're at home against Ireland. Like, we don't have to play well. We don't have to blow the doors off. Like, we just need to sort of play well enough and, you know, sort of get enough rust off us that we can sort of go forward to the rest of it. It was almost like a warm-up game as opposed to a test match.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a pool game in a World Cup where you're playing against who's meant to be finishing sort of third or fourth in the pool, as opposed to a big pool game to get you into the quarterfinal. I feel like they've saved quite a bit back for England and even maybe Wales and Scotland.
So this is the thing. I was thinking about this. I was thinking about it last weekend watching England play, and then this morning thinking about the podcast. Like, I understand why England-France is the last game, and I understand why it was the last game the last 3 years, although one of those was explicitly because it was a first-second playoff. It was that weird COVID one. Because it is the game that decides the tournament. And I don't think the tournament is yet at a point where you can change that. But it also does make the tournament quite different for England and France. And yeah, the early games do kind of feel a bit pool stagey. Like,
yeah, they have a final where everyone else is playing a tournament.
Yeah, they have a final and the rest of them are in a league. And I think there's maybe something to France's performances about that. And it will be really interesting actually to see how how they approached the Scotland game and if last weekend has made them go, okay, well, actually, we've got a bit of a fucking quarterfinal here first. Like,
yeah, I think from an Irish perspective, that, no, sorry, from a French perspective, that last game is so difficult to kind of analyse because Ireland, like, played it really smartly, I think. Played, like, a huge kicking game with...
Best they've played for years.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, like, defensively was so just, like, dogged all over the park. Like, Niamh Jones outstanding.
Niamh Jones was absolutely terrifying.
Ridiculous.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah. They interviewed her about tackling, and she was like, "I just think it's really good crack in it."
Like, what a legend, God. Man. What a legend. This is why, like, men's rugby players just don't say shit like that, and that's why it's terrible. But yeah, like, from a French perspective, with both Laurie Sansus and Jesse Tremoulier both recently retiring, I feel like they've really changed the way that they're kicking. That they're kicking, to clear, they kick off nine mostly, off Bourdon, Sansus, get her to do most of it. And otherwise, they're basically only using kicks as like an attacking weapon, which I find really interesting. They're leaving most of it to Boulard at the back, who's, you know, a winger slash fullback. And again, she's just using attacking kicks. She's, you know, sticking it down the tram lines, basically just doing it to scare the opposition back three rather than do anything like tactically kind of like masterful. So I don't know if that's just them saving stuff back as they did in the World Cup or whether that's a case of, you know, that's just the way they're going to kick now. It's hard to tell.
I think there's a lot of, yeah, I mean, how do you replace Jesse Tremoulier, right? Mm. Like, and the options they have are all, they're very French fly halves, right? Like,
yeah.
The game is off nine. And so Kewa and Bourgeois and Boulard are all kind of, they're kickers, but they're not fly halves in the way that you would get in the home nation, say. And yeah, I think it will be really interesting to see if it's a tactic about, if it's holding cards back or if it's adapting to the players they have now and changing the way they play around that. Although, interestingly, oh no, I've forgotten her name and I don't want to refer to her the World Cup, but Thingy-Rajig was back. Drouin, yes. Who I love, Caroline Drouin, was back in the squad for the Sevens, from the Sevens, or she would have been.
That's so on brand that you just forgot her name. Like, just like French, just like French rugby, Caroline Drouin's name just does not exist in your brain anymore.
But she was going to be back in the squad. She's injured. That's why
they injured her, so that they wouldn't have to.
But I think it would be very interesting to see, yeah, what they do at 10. And if they're just feeling out their options at the moment and deciding that quite reasonably they can just play off Pauline for now and see.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Irish commentary, by the way, I have so many issues with in general, like across the whole rugby. At least their equal opportunities dog shit at their jobs. But Hugh Cahill was heading up, and I don't know if he's heading up the commentary for the tournament, like he probably is. But one, he's like really openly and intensely misogynistic, and I don't really understand why he still has a job at RTE, never mind commentating on women's rugby. But he didn't know anything. He was asking on air live, like, so why does this actually matter then for WXV? Like, how does it actually work? Like, which WXV they get put into depending on where they finish in the Six Nations and stuff like that. And asking, like, oh, it's a shock that Emer Considine's not playing. Not really. You know, it's like saying that it's a shock that fucking Niamh Briggs isn't playing. She's been coaching for like 4 years now. And also, they kept calling her just Sansus. And obviously I was watching the game and I knew that they were talking about Pauline Bourdon, but I was like, don't get my hopes up like that. Don't make me think for one split second that they're both playing. I was like, what if they're both playing somehow? And I just had huge problems with it. But I do think that France almost treated this game like a warm-up game. And I thought they still played well. Like, they didn't play their best. But like I said, I think that they knew they didn't need to. And they still caused Ireland. No, I don't think so. I think they caused Ireland huge set-piece problems even with that.
they're the team that we can say the least about, funnily enough, haven't said so much, like, with confidence based on that first round, because it's just,
yeah,
like, it's very clear what England are trying to do, even though they are like, aiming for their final in the fifth round. With
and
France,
the thing about...
It's not.
I think any team who had played against Ireland, we would probably be saying that, though. I don't think it's a specifically true. French thing. Yeah, I think true. That there was yeah. a different context to playing Ireland, especially in the first game. If we want to call Scotland versus France, I mean, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but you guys could do it first, I suppose.
I often avoid doing this kind of thing, but I will say France have the bullshit factor in both Gabriel Vernier and Matusa Fall, who was like back to her best on the weekend. And it's so good to see her back, like ridiculously good ball carrier and just utter bullshit in defence as well. So I feel like that will give France the edge. But I reckon Scotland will weirdly like be like the smarter team and will be in the game the whole way and tactically will play it right. So I feel like it will be a really good game for Scotland. But I feel like, the bullshit factor will just drag France through without necessarily playing well to the final whistle.
Yeah, I think France will have woken up a bit that Ireland could hold them as well as they did in the first half and that Scotland played as well as they did against Wales. I think they will take this game more seriously than they would have done if it was in the first fixture. And I think the combination of them taking it more seriously just mentally and the talent they have will let them edge it. But I think it will be within a score. And I think there will definitely be a point where we're sat there saying, oh my God, can Scotland win this? Like,
I think France were guilty of almost overplaying at times at the weekend. And I think if that was sort of a controlled overplaying in that they said, like, you know, we can overplay here because we're not really going to be in danger of losing the game, and we can just sort of see like a real sort of blow the cobwebs off sort of thing in terms of like we'll just play fucking ridiculous amounts of ball that we know isn't really going to work, but then when we go to do it next week we can play at sort of 80% of that and it'll come off. If that was on purpose, then I think that they're going to be much stronger coming into this game, but I think we still don't really know if they were just sort of playing not poorly, but not their best either. I do still think they'll edge it as well. I feel so harsh on Scotland because they were so, so good at the weekend. But it is really hard to see them win this one. If they do, like, what a fucking result for them and for the tournament as well. Like, that blows the tournament. Yeah. I think the tournament...
Oh, God, I'm cheering for Scotland. Make no mistake.
Yeah.
I think the tournament was blown wide open in general, I think. But I think
also France had a weird tournament last year. They had a weird WXV. You know, there's that amazing win against New Zealand. And then the rest of it was actually like quite disappointing. Like, it's just really hard to say.
Like, beating New Zealand and then losing to Australia was just sort of...
mad. And it's just really
so
hard
to quantify. Like, I just don't know what they're doing. Like, it's so hard to know if they're really in control or have lost all control, I feel like. And I don't think that we'll know. We might not even know that after this weekend. I think it'll be, you know, as the tournament goes deeper and deeper. But
I think if they lose to Scotland, we'll know that they're out of control.
Yeah, maybe, actually. But then that seems harsh on
even
Scotland.
Scotland
well,
like... No, even though Scotland would have earned it. But I think if they lose to Scotland, there's an element of like, okay, you're rebuilding. But like, you actually have accumulated enough bad performances now that we can be concerned. Scotland would be like the cherry on the icing, not like the sole factor sort of thing. Yeah. But I think Scotland, I mean, if you said to Scotland last year, you'll beat Wales away and we'll be fucking seriously talking about you beating France, even if you then lose, I think they'd be like, yes, that is capital R, capital P, real progress, and we will have it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, because I think last year, like, before it became really apparent just how bad things were with Ireland, it was like, oh, but they could challenge against Scotland or Italy. They were sort of being put in as that like lower half of the table team. And I think that they're definitely looking at, especially from beating Wales, I think that they're looking at like, we could very easily finish third and sort of make a shock push for second, which is what we were saying about Wales last week. But I think if we want to move on to Wales, it's not the best fixture to follow up a narrow home loss with having to go away to England. I guess, like, what I mean, it seems sort of childish to say what do we think, because I think we all know.
I think in some ways it maybe is the best fixture, you know, because we won't win this, right? Like,
go and have a crack, like.
Bonus well, I don't respect Wales. Your opinion because you're a man.
Yeah, well, I'm just gonna put you on mute for a while, if that's okay.
About time.
You know what? I would love to believe. I think the team that Wales have put out is the most serious team, like the most serious approach to this game that they could take, and that
really interesting team. I think
really interesting team says to me that they're like. That they want to finish strong,
yeah,
and that they want to that they are targeting one bonus point, whether that's tries or like within seven, mm-hmm. That they're not going to fall away after like a strong 30, 40, 50 minutes. And I think that's the best way to approach it. Like, Wales have to look at this game and go, yeah, we're dramatically unlikely to win, but we have to walk away. But we have to walk away with something actual, like something meaningful, not a good performance, not a decent scrum, not a few nice tries.
Yeah, like, not keeping in it for half an hour like last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need a point from this game. Yeah. We have to be able to
like this team. So last night I was watching my favourite TV show, the Her Story doc that they dropped weekly. Yeah. I was watching that last night.
I hate that name. I've said it before. It really makes me cringe. The content is great, but the name really makes me cringe.
But in there, Johan Cunningham says that the build-up to our World Cup campaign starts now because we've got three campaigns. We're going to blood as much depth as we possibly can. And he's really shown that in his selection here. I think that first off, like, the changes he's made. So Karis Phillips and Donna Rose are both really experienced, really good scrummagers who, as much as they won't destroy in the same way that Cecilia Tuipulotu and Kelsey Jones will, they'll hold that quite tight, I'd like to imagine. Obviously, against England's a very different prospect with the pack that they'll be putting out. But I really like those, that you can bring on Cecilia and Kelsey Jones towards the end. That's great. I think Georgia Evans obviously very experienced. Kate Williams, whisperingly, deserves to start over Alicia Butchers. Like, Alicia Butchers is a great player, is one of the most talented and high-performing players in Wales. But since she came back from her ACL injury, hasn't been on the same level of form that she used to be. I think Kate Williams.
And I also think.
Go on.
Yeah, sorry, I agree. And I'm just interrupting you there. Sorry, Will.
No, that's fine.
I think you're right that Kate Williams is sort of the form blind side. I also think I would rather have Alicia Butcher's experience coming off the last 30 minutes. Yeah. Definitely.
I think that bench just screams like that they are backing the players who are starting. It's not that, you know, Cecilia hasn't been... I hate this sort of thing of, like, players haven't been dropped, their role has been changed, but that's exactly what's happened. Because, like, if you look at Kelsey Jones and Cecilia Tuipulotu coming off the bench, you're like, fucking hell, like, okay, like, we surrender kind of thing. It's just, like, that isn't...
Sometimes
they have such good depth. Like Scotland, they've built that depth, and that's not an accident that they don't just suddenly have these players. That the fact that they can, like, they're in a position where they can drop those players. Yeah. You look at say Ireland, for example. Yeah. Linda Dugang played 76 minutes at the weekend in a game that was lost, and she was playing both sides of the scrum, like depending on what scrum it was, because they don't have anybody else, because Sy McGrath is like still 12 years old, and it has probably got like actual tangible trauma from last year's Six Nations. And I think that it's really interesting that Wales are in a position that they're able to do that now, and like it's such a shot to nothing game, but why don't you just fucking do it? Like,
and like, if we're not in that position, we're going to force it so the world makes it that position that we're in. You know, we're going to drop these in the deep end. Like, you look at that Welsh back row, right? The amount of tackles that those three will make combined with Kate Williams, Alex Callender and Bethan Lewis, like the amount of tackles those guys will make when we don't have, realistically, we're going to have less possession in this game than normally would have, just because it's against the Red Roses and they always dominate possession with Marley Packer and, you know.
Will, are you a fan of Alex Callender?
Yeah, she's great.
You've never mentioned that. Yeah. You're like a new convert.
Yeah.
Does she have a nickname or anything?
I'm a day one fan of Alex Callender. But I think the biggest, there's two really big calls here for me. One of them on the bench is the fact that they've gone with Kaylee Powell coming back, who's not played any 15-a-side rugby this season, and hasn't played at 10 in a long time and is clearly covering there. But with Niamh Terry kind of taking a long time to acclimatise to Celtic Challenge level playing 10, you can imagine it's going to be a lot harder to
acclimatise there at international level. Yeah. Whereas Kayleigh Powell's established as a fullback, and it's fair enough experimenting with her potentially as a 10 with a nothing to lose thing. But the big selection is Shaun Jones playing 9, which I love that they've backed her. After last week, she copped a lot of flack on debut for the thing about kicking the ball out. But the thing is, in the time it took for somebody to take the ball in, her to roll it back, get the caterpillar ruck going, put the ball in her hands and kick it, if that was just her call, somebody would have said, no, run the fucking ball. Whereas that's clearly somebody has messed up, probably thought the kick's gone through the posts, or thought there was enough time left on the clock, whatever. But she's such a good game controlling 9. It was unbelievable. Like, it became clear so fast that she's so far above the level of the Celtic challenge.
She had a really good game for 80 and a half minutes. And I think it's really childish to just sort of, it would have been childish to sort of pin the last 2 seconds of that game as her whole performance, which I thought she played really, really well.
She's so good.
The literal entire game until that kick. And I think that, if you want to pin that on her, you have to pin missing that conversion on Blakey George, because that was a sitter conversion, realistically, and for a 10 like her. And I think, go on.
Jenny Hesketh missed 2 tackles that were really simple early on. And I really hope it was just nerves of her first cap. But I'm so sick of Wales having fullbacks that can't tackle. It's so annoying. Like,
the point is that it's not about one player. And I think
I think if you asked every
punishing
player
essentially
in Wales
a player who played well for that one little
like Karen Lake got skinned on that Ronan Lloyd try. Like,
I genuinely
you can point
think
at every player. There's never been a performance where
you said
a player
to
hasn't made one mistake.
100%.
Do you think you made a mistake that changed this game? I reckon every single one of them would have been able to put their hands up. And I think that shows in the fact that they're starting Shaun Jones this week instead of bringing her off the bench. Like, they're saying, we don't think that was your fault. We realise it was a team problem. And as a team, we're committed to, getting better.
But our attack looked better with her.
We're going to give you a different opportunity and a different set of pressures, because this is the depth that we're building.
I think she'll play
well. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a really good thing. Having Kira Bevan come off the bench to take kicks that are important in the last 20 minutes is probably a better balance of.
And I think as well, you have to give those
the only reliable kicker.
You have to give players like that an opportunity to rise to that occasion. You can't say you made one mistake, so you're dropped now. Just is going to mess with players' heads. And I think that giving her another opportunity, not that she needed to, she doesn't need another opportunity. She
19.
Took her opportunity really well. She played really fucking well, but not sort of pinning that on her to the extent that it changes, because I'm sure that before that kick, if you pause the game on sort of 80 minutes and 4 seconds or whatever, and you ask who's starting at 9 next week, that's your answer. So I think that not changing your mind just based on that one mistake is they're building in it. And I think that they're building in a really good way. And they've got this sort of, they're able to do that. They're able to say, right, Nell Metcalf played last week. She can go on the bench this week and we can sort of, and if she plays really well off the bench, maybe she'll start next week. There's no nailed on necessarily jerseys. And I think that's a really good thing, because I think that you can end up in a position where your first team get loads of experience, but then they start aging out and they start getting leggy because they're playing so much. And then your next level have nothing because you've never let them have a go. And I think that Wales are not going to do that. I mean, it's clear from the selection that they're not going to do that.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I wonder if Metcalf might come on at fullback as well, just to give her a go in that position as well.
To give her
a bit more experience there internationally, I think is on the cards. And with at the end of last Six Nations, when Fionn Lewis got injured, did her ACL, suddenly it became the case that, we've only got 1-9. Whereas since the Celtic Challenge, we've got Megan Davis has been on really good form. And Shaun Jones looks like a real future star. As I said, she's only 19. This is as good an opportunity for her to shine. Even if Wales end up having a sticky first half where they don't play as well as possible, I can just see her really standing out and making the right decisions, managing the game and making breaks. I really, really back it.
Mm.
Can I ask a question that might be like kind of heresy? How did you think that Jazz Joyce played at the weekend?
Oh, I've already had quite a few discussions about this.
Nowhere near the usual standard of Jazz Joyce. Not to say terrible, but like for Jazz, that was like a 5 out of 10 game.
She looked slow.
I don't think anyone in our back line is behind. I don't think anyone behind 10 is as convincing as they need to be.
Are we sort of staring down the barrel of an uncomfortable reality where it's not her anymore? Like, it looked like one of those performances. And I think that there is a danger of calling time on players too early as well. And like, obviously she's still fucking Jazz Joyce at the end of the day, but there was a couple of times that she fell off one tackle and she got skinned another time. And I was like, if that's not Jazz Joyce though, like that, she makes those tackles and she catches those players.
Yeah. Actually, I would say it kind of has a little bit been Jazz Joyce for a while. And that's my thing here. Like, I think the weaknesses in Wales's back line last Saturday are weaknesses that have been there before. And some of those players get a pass because they're new.
Yeah.
And some of them are definitely approaching, like, yeah, not chucking them out, because I think we've introduced a new 10, we're introducing a new 9 in Shan Jones, we've introduced Jenny Hesketh and Nell Metcalf. Like, that back line needs time for the old and the new to gel together. But I think now there is
more increase.
I think Karen Lake, I hate to say it, but I think Hannah Jones and I think Jazz Joyce are all like...
I love them both.
You have to step up players and make this work. But because if it's not working, it's on you now. Like, it was on... You were there before and you're there now. And if those problems remain...
Karen Lake's great and is a bit built different. But also, like, she is not as quick as any of the other 12s playing in the championship.
She's just not,
Hannah Jones is a great player with the ball. Like, is technically a really good rugby player. But again, isn't as fast as Emma Orr. Isn't as fast as Emily Scarrett or, you know, Helen Rowlands. And isn't as fast as Marion Menager. Like, we'll probably struggle against those. And that happened.
I think I would keep Hannah Jones because I think she has the highest ceiling of.
Yeah.
And she's younger.
Maybe
enough,
as a 12.
She has leadership, but maybe as a 12. Or as a different type of 13 with a different type of 12 inside her.
Yeah.
I think this week is too soon to get rid of any of them. And I think the next round would still be too soon because I do think they deserve time.
Definitely.
To work out as a collective what they can do. But
I do think that as well. But then you're looking at a position where they were whitewashed in the WXV. And then if they don't have as good a Six Nations this year as they should have done, which they're already on course to do, having lost to Scotland, it feels like, you know, they're more than likely going to drop to WXV2. And then you, like, where, you know, that slide can start, like, really gradually. And then all of a sudden, they're sort of...
It's a really, like, incredibly tricky balance.
You don't want to be trending towards Ireland, you know, using them as the sort of the example of rock bottom, which is where they were last year, for sure. Like, you don't want to be trending that way. You really do want to be, like, even if it's really slow and incremental, moving the other way. And I wonder if Wales are sliding slightly.
I think I would keep definitely Hannah Jones and Jazz Joyce for now. Probably Karen Lake as well, although less confidently. For at least,
I wasn't trying to retire Jazz Joyce or anything.
No, but like, I think I would keep them. I think I would keep them and back them if I were like Yvonne Cunningham.
Yeah.
For at least the England and the Ireland games, and then I'd kind of be like, if they haven't impressed by then, like, France is kind of the last shot, and against Italy, we're going to be doing something new because we're going to need, like, something to take away from this tournament. I would be looking at, I think you might too, Will, at Jenna De Vera, maybe.
Jenna De Vera is very young, is the thing. But
she's very
my
young,
thought is, in terms of who comes in, so obviously, in terms of out wide on the winger at fullback, like, Amelia Tutt's been on really good form at Leicester.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I really like the look of her. But Karis Cox has been playing 12 for Ealing Trailfinders and is an option in the centres. And above Jenna De Vera, I'd also... I've not seen her playing in the centres so much, but I'd like to see Catherine Richards get a go, whether it's on the wing or whether they do give her a bit of time in the centre to see what she is, because she's so unbelievably balanced. And I would love to see what she can do at this level. And I think she's still uncapped at this point, but she is extremely promising.
I think there's definitely a balance for them to find between trying stuff and not sacrificing wins, because they 100%. Do definitely still need to win.
You need to drip feed these players in.
Yeah.
I think also, as much as, like, I love Sekhi George, I think we all do, and I think probably all of us have been calling for her to take the 10 jersey for a while, even if it's just more time in it. But I do think we have to remember that, like, this is kind of her start as the 10 for Wales, and Kerrin Lake and Hannah Jones both play with her at Gloucester Hartbury. I think, like, she deserves a bit of stability as well to try and settle into this. Like, the fact that she is, for me, nailed on at 10 doesn't mean she isn't also, like, quite new.
That there's nobody else. She's not got a backup at 10, which is quite worrying.
Which is also quite worrying, yeah. So I think there are so many moving parts to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if I were Kerrin Lake, Hannah Jones, and or Jazz Joyce, I would be, like, really in the gym, really working on just absolutely every element I can to be like, I'm going to pull out a fucking all-time performance at some point in this tournament, because I'm going to need to.
100%.
Yeah, I don't think it's unfair to say that they played poorly, but it's also, like, important to sort of contextualize it with, you know, they are so unpolished and they are bringing in new players, and it is, like, it's very much a work in progress, like so many of these teams are. Like, even if we move on to England, like, they are the sort of the closest thing that we have in women's rugby to an actual, like, finished product, I suppose. But even they, you know, well, they didn't play their best game, but then they won 38-0, and it was, like, extremely comfortable, and they kind of 48, fuck's sake. Yeah. And they really barreled through Italy in the second half. But it, so, like, they are sort of playing on a different playing field. But, like, I think it's going to be difficult for Wales to get anything out of this game. So you look at the England-Italy game, and in the first half, Italy were sort of, it was 0-0 for way longer than I think anyone expected it to be. And then you sort of were like, oh, maybe. And then after halftime, England were like, yeah, well, we're actually the Red Roses, so what we're going to do is to score, like, an obscene number of tries. And, like, quite like France, they didn't have to play well to do that. So I think that for Wales, I think it's going to be a difficult one.
I think it will be hard. I think the thing for me is, like, to sort of circle back a bit to, like, the bench discussion and the depth and the trusting Shan Jones to start this week. Like, I was really frustrated and disappointed on Saturday with all of the problems that have seemed like problems for a while finally being sufficient to lose as a game that we could have won in terms of, like, the players we have. And I think I agree with you, Patricia, that it will be really hard. But I think the way that I don't think you can ask for more right now than the way they've approached it. Like, the approach that we're taking says to me that this isn't a fuck up, that we shouldn't yet be assuming this is a fuck up within the camp, within the coaching, within the structure. This is a kind of an inevitable point of, you know, you don't just get a free run at developing. Other teams are also developing, and sometimes they'll do it, like, faster, and sometimes they'll be better than you. So I think I'm more confident that Wales could score 4 tries than I am that Wales could get a losing bonus point.
Yeah, it screams of one of those more, like, 60-28 kind of games, or like 60-30 or whatever. Like, it does feel like one of those.
But I do also think Wales coming away from this game with, like, a good performance from, say, Jones and Cox and a losing bonus point would be a genuinely meaningful.
A losing point would be an unreal return, I think. I think if they're looking at the bonus point, they'll be looking at tries. And I think
a losing bonus point would be basically
insane. Really, really. Like, yeah, literally. Like, Will, you're going to be there, aren't you? So.
Yeah. And I would cry if we could win it in the last play and don't. I would genuinely cry if that happened. So, yeah. But
I know that you think that Wales are going to win comfortably with a bonus point, but, like, Rhiannon, are we both sort of assuming that this will be an England win?
Yeah, and I think it will be by quite a bit more than a score. But I think I'm going to say I back Wales to score 4 tries. I think we have that in us.
I think it's the same thing as with Scotland, France. Like, we're not saying that Wales are a bad team now, and we're not saying that they're like finished or whatever, but like, they are playing away against England, and there is a sort of a set, like, you do have to be realistic.
It's a tough
about
game.
That the same
I'll
thing.
Give you that. It's a tough game.
We can't belly rub teams just because we like them. Like, you do have to sort of be realistic about the fact that they are a baby professional team playing against like a sort of, you know, teenage professional
but
team.
But you can talk down teams because you don't like them. So fuck England.
Also, could I just say, Patricia, I texted you this during the game, but like, I finally reached the stage where I actually don't want the Red Roses to win. Like, I'm not fully in the fuck them, I wish to laugh at their misfortunes and dance on their grave kind of levels. But I am definitely at the, no, I only want you to win against certain teams, and that's because I like strongly dislike those teams.
I think the way I felt is like before the match, I was like, you know, this is going to be what it's going to be, and like it still feels like a bit of a privilege to watch the Red Roses when they're in full form and they play as well as they do. And then
it was a joy to watch them.
And then it was an hour, and I was like, fuck this rugby team. I've never cared less about a rugby team. But they were really interesting watching them, sort of like Alan in The Hangover when he's counting the cards and all the numbers fly around his head. Like, that's what England felt like they were doing in real time, going like, right, let's try this and see if, like, it felt like you were watching a team do a jigsaw as opposed to watching a team play rugby. I thought it was a really,
Which
really
was,
interesting performance.
It was really cool to watch them.
Yeah, you I could see that. You could see the rugby intelligence in that team, and it wasn't like, they didn't look like they were running up blind alleys. Like, they looked like everything that they were trying, they knew that they were trying, and they knew when they were trying it, and they knew like what they were sort of expecting to happen. And like, they didn't look sort of confused at any point. They looked like they were trying stuff. It was a really, like, I don't know. Yeah. It's not often that we get to see rugby teams play like that. It looked like they looked like they were training while playing a test match, and it was
especially
really,
as they adapted to playing with 14 as well, like really early in the game, and they didn't really have that much trouble with it. You know, it took maybe a few passages of play of rustiness, and then
the fact they were still making space out wide when they only had 13 players on the pitch was, I know Italy were ragged by then, they're
just
exhausted,
silly.
But still,
also just like, Sarah Beckett's out, we're just going to put Alex Matthews in, are we, grow up, you know what I mean? Grow up.
It is still a bit disgusting when you look at them and you're like, oh, this is just unfair. This is real.
I will say, I don't think this would have made the difference, right? Like, because let's be serious. But I'm not sure. I'm on record as, you know, Beatrice Rigoni is the queen of my heart. Like, I would die for that
woman. Number one player.
She's the number one player. But she, you know, like, I am hers, body and soul. I'll do whatever she wants me to do. But I don't think there is a worse player for Italy to lose in a game like that than Michaela Solari.
It was one of those. I'm very much on the, like, decapitate anyone who does a croc roll train. I think that they're
horrible to watch. She's out of the tournament, stretching her leg.
It's a constrict. It's so lazy.
Every single croc roll is a career ender, and it's just blind luck.
It's just blind luck when it's not.
That players can come back from them. And I think, like, it didn't look like, it never looked good, but to hear that she's fractured her leg, like, you broke her leg, you know, at Sarah Beckett. Like, you literally broke her leg.
Fracture is just a nice way of saying broke. You broke her leg.
That's exactly what happened. Is actually her leg is now broken. There are now two bits of bone where there should be one bit of bone because you croc rolled her, and it's like, it's gross. And I think that
disgusting.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That sort of injury news for Italy, which, if we want to move on to Ireland, Italy, was sort of the start of me going like, maybe Ireland might win a rugby game.
This is the thing. Like, she is actually, she doesn't get, obviously she gets a lot of plaudits. She doesn't get anywhere near as many plaudits because she's just not as fun as Beatrice is.
She's so important to what they do, though. Like, Beatrice Rigoni is like your sort of, She's like your extra fun. Yeah. She's your, you know, your luxury player. Whereas Solari is
the she's not the most
Solari's
important.
Solari's like the foil.
Yeah.
Like, Solari is
she's got a massive boot on her. Yeah. And
she's
also,
clever. She's discreetly hard as nails. She's
when
so
Ragone does
calm,
something batshit, she's always on the same wavelength as well, which is this, really important.
It's actually wild because I think she's an incredibly calm player, but she is also completely attuned to the insane shit that Ragone will do.
Yeah.
It doesn't in any way fuck up her zen. Like on the pitch. It's an extraordinary...
It's like, oh, you need me to run this line off you, Beatrice, even though you're doing something mental? Fine, if that's what helps.
You're
going
to throw the ball
for
your legs at me again, are you? Not a problem. I've adjusted my position to catch it.
I go on, Will.
What if Alicia Dinka moves to centre? Can we have that, please? Because that would be so much fun.
I am into that.
That sounds great. Maybe not this weekend, but maybe a different time.
Yeah, fair.
I really like Alyssa Dinka.
I'd be interested to hear what the read was on Ireland from people who aren't sort of Irish and like sort of entrenched in how fucking terrible the whole thing is. Because I thought they were so like stratospherically improved from last year, but they also still didn't have an attacking game, still leaked 40 points and still never actually really looked like winning the game. And it's this really weird space of like, you want to sort of give them their flowers for the improvement, but at the same time, how tangible is an improvement when the result and the game still goes like that, I suppose?
I think it's still a way off.
Yeah. I don't like this phrase actually, but it's a damning indictment to say this is the best game they've played in quite a few years, I think.
Yeah.
Like the most well-rounded game in terms of
they scored as many tries in this one game as they scored in the tournament last year.
Wow.
Yeah. But also just
and Sam Monaghan scored both of those tries last year and she wasn't even playing in this game. Just it was like even more of an achievement.
Huge boost, by the way, isn't it, that she's coming back?
Oh, yeah, like, massive. Yeah. Like, the sort of 1-2 of Monaghan coming back and Solari being out for Italy is, like, that's a swing, it feels like. That's, like, an huge actual proper swing.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing, the offloads that Monaghan brings, you know, Sammy Bill. But for Gloucester Hartbury this year, that's not even been the headline for her. It has just been the carrying, the rucks she hits, like the line.
She's just so well-rounded in a way that a lot of Irish players don't have an opportunity to be at the moment. And because she is playing such a high level of rugby every week for such a fucking 100%. Ridiculously bullshit team, and like her coming back in is just like, and even just bringing the sort of the relative professionalism that the rest of these players don't get the opportunity to. Yeah, like it's such a level raiser, and like combined with Italy losing Solari, it does really feel like an actual like swing back towards Ireland.
She'll really fit in with the pack and how they played last week as well. Like,
I thought their pack were really good, actually, to be fair. Brilliant. They got minced in the scrum a couple of times and their lineout's not brilliant.
Back row's so good though.
Really good. And that's
Hogan
without
particularly can carry, like
that's without Derv. Like Derv Linica Ward is still injured. Yeah. Mabel Goleri is still persona non grata for some reason.
And of course
and Dorothy Wall is having to play second row. Like it's
with Clean Maloney still serves to requirements, of course.
With the players missing
contested instead.
With the players missing for sort of injury and political reasons, for that back row to have still been as good as they were, I thought they were brilliant. And I think that like, I think it's green shoots, but at the same time, I wonder, am I losing the run of myself being like, maybe they could win this game on Saturday, on Sunday?
I think two things. One, I think the first half against France is more indicative of what this Ireland squad could currently do. And I mean, that's like a bit silly in some ways because France like got better in the second half and they clicked a bit more and Ireland got tireder in the second half. But I think taking Fowley off at 10 and replacing her with O'Brien, I understand why. I think it was worthwhile to give them both
the
IRF,
like they love Dana O'Brien, right? Like there is nobody they love more than they love Dana O'Brien.
And I think against France, they weren't going to win the game. It was worthwhile.
Yeah, I agree. I think just do
level.
It. I think that they need to not do that this week. I would stick with Fowley in a big way. And I would stick with the kind of, yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And this is what I mean about Ireland being like a more complete team. Like there were still gaping fucking holes everywhere. but you could see that as a rugby team, they were executing like you could see like a carpet with moth holes in it, as opposed to just like some random pieces of material on the floor.
I think they still have a low ceiling because of just the position that they're in. But I think that the game that they played specifically with Fowley at 10 felt like, you could see what they were doing. There was a game plan there, which is already more than they had last year. Like last year, it looked like a group of players who'd never met before. Yeah. But I do think there was a little bit of composure, like a little bit. Well, they were actually doing something. That's the thing. And they were kicking long. You could tell they actually had a kicking game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It was a plan because they figured it out. Because they have a quick back row and quick and big outside backs. So they were like, kick long and, you know, chase and get them. And like, they wouldn't have been able to do that last year, I don't think. And I don't think that's not necessarily personnel. That's just like it, the whole thing in general. And I do think, there's obviously still like huge problems with the fact that they shipped 40 points, didn't win. They were, you know, they're still a little bit too reliant on give it to Bavin for a team who are having problems shipping the ball wide.
That's the one thing. Their shape and attack still looks shit, especially when playing off 10. Like,
they are toothless when they have the ball.
Yeah, I really like Fowley. I think she's a really good kicking option, as I say. Like, I think it's great that they lean into that style of play. But in terms of like coming to back it up, she literally stands like an inch from the gain line in terms of where she plays, and like 2 meters from the scrum half. At that point, it's just pointless you even being there.
And like, they are still really disjointed in terms of the fact that none of these players really play together regularly outside of AIL, which is the sort of they are bringing that through from the AIL clubs, but like, while that's the highest level of women's rugby in Ireland,
it's not on the players at all.
No, it's not. And then you have the Sevens players coming back in. Like, they play a different sport. They get paid to play a different sport, and they're sort of essentially lending their services as like contract workers to this team. And so, like, it's obviously not going to look as seamless as some of the other teams.
Yeah, like, it's sort of quite cheap to be like, oh, I think Fowley should get Higgins into the game more because she's a brilliant outside centre. Like, that is true.
Like, do you know what I mean?
That would definitely make things better, but, like, it's not just, like, pass her the fucking ball. It's so much more complicated.
I think they're still... I don't know, has there been an improvement on last year with ball in hand, like in an attacking sense? I mean, obviously has, in terms of the fact that they scored 2 tries in this game, and like, they scored 2 tries in the tournament last year. But then you look at like, Italy scored 0, and like, yes, they were playing England, where Ireland were playing like kind of a stuttering France team. But I think Ireland and Italy coming together in this game, does it feel harder to call than it actually is? Like, am I sort of being blinded by like, we're a Catholic country and Jesus is rising this day and Ireland are playing in the rugby game, and therefore Ireland are going to rise with the good Lord?
Italy also famously a Catholic country.
Yeah, but the game's in Ireland, like, so it's going to be extra Catholic here. Like, there's going to be fucking church bells ringing next to the RDS as the game kicks off.
I think this is quite like the Scotland-France one, right? And that last year this was a very straightforward assessment, and I don't think Ireland will win this game, but I also think they could, and again, like, they really should be looking, they shouldn't be looking to just play well, they should be looking to very seriously upset Italy.
I think the only change they should make is bringing Sam Monaghan in. I think that they need to, like, they're not in a position of where Wales are, where they can bring in new players and let them have a go. Like, they have the players they have, and they need to keep playing
them. Let these players spend more than 20 minutes in each other's company.
Lay down the groundwork and then figure out everything else around it.
Yeah, like,
what
they
really
are still
different is all the issues, similar to what we're saying about Wales, but like, all the issues with Ireland remain things that could be so easily fixed by just like letting them actually be proper professional rugby players, in terms of stuff that, like, if you were on the daily practicing this is your attacking setup, and also all the benefits they'll get from the gym and so on, everything around that, then those players would look 10 times better and more capable of competing at this level. And you can see, you can tangibly see it, which is really frustrating at this point, because the Six Nations, the highest level of European rugby, should not be coming down to this. So the thing is, if I looked at the Ireland team sheet, I'd probably look at that and go like, yeah, why would they not beat Italy? Why can't they beat Italy? But at the same time as that, I think Italy will have the edge on them in attack. It's largely for me comes down to how Ireland kick and whether their kicking game can negate that, whether they can just play what certain Gammony rugby fans would describe as really negatively and just kick the leather off the ball, get after it, you know, back yourself to have the energy to turn that ball over and try and just squeeze the life out of Italy. But I think their attack's going to be just too good for Ireland, unfortunately, Patricia.
I also think that their tight five is going to be... It didn't show that much against England or at all, but I think, you know, Italy have a better tight five. And I think... I mean, Tarani...
Certainly in the tight.
Yeah.
Like, Guy Marie is like such a solid loose head.
I think Ireland still have the problem of falling off a cliff because after, you know, like 50 minutes or whatever, because they're literally not professional rugby players. Like, I refuse to sort of plumasse the IRFU like contracts that they've given. Like, I'm basically working part-time at the minute and I earn more than the quote-unquote professional Irish rugby players. And I know it's not just about the money, it's about the structures, etc. But they actually don't have any structures. The structures are in the two AIL clubs in Dublin. And like the top AIL team in the country at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, is UL Bowes, who play in Limerick. And there's one Munster player in the extended Six Nations squad. So like there's so many problems in Irish rugby that the players themselves can't fix, and they can't sort of perform over those problems. Like there is a wall in front of them. Who's just what, like, not to just like divulge into objectifying rugby players, but like when she came up on the pre-match graphic, I was like, it's just ridiculous. Stop being good and pretty, like, choose one. I'm sorry, like, it's just actually unfair. But I think if they kick like they did against France, and if Fowley is left on for, you know, more than half the game, I think that they could, in theory, cause issues for Italy. I think that it's a game that they'll miss Derva Nicovor, to be honest. I think that she would really suit this style of like kick chase game that they look to be trying to sort of start playing.
Like what we're saying about the Welsh back row, isn't it? About get a back row is going to make the most tackles physically possible. You know, ideally you'd have Nicovor in there.
If you could get
Clean Maloney and put Niamh Jones on the back row, that wouldn't hurt either.
I'm not going to South Dublin for the good of my health, right? Like, personally, I avoid the RDS. Personally, I avoid the RDS like the fucking plague. It's the worst stadium in the world. But I am going to be there, and I don't intend on being there to watch Ireland lose. And I just think that... I think it would be an upset, but I don't think that it's beyond the realms in a way that, you know, 2 weeks ago I would have probably said it was. And so yeah, I'm going to go for them, because it realistically doesn't actually matter either way whether or not they lose.
Good on you.
I think the outcome of this game will also, this entire game, not just the outcome, will tell us a lot about where all the other teams kind of are respectively. Like, it will help us think about France and where they are, and England actually, and how... like how much they were working out against Italy. Like, I think there's a lot of wider narratives for the tournament within this game. It's not just, oh, is this a wooden spoon playoff, actually?
100%. I might end on an extremely important question for both of you, if you don't mind. If you were going to an Italy match and you were picking a jelly sweet to present to Beatrice Rigoni in tribute after the game, what jelly sweet would you pick?
I'm just going to Google Italian candy.
I was going to say one from your culture, which is England, so you don't have culture. But you know, Will, what's your favourite jelly sweet?
I was going to say one of those like sugary jelly babies, maybe one of the yellow ones. I reckon she'd be a fan of those.
Okay.
I'm really lame because like my favourites are like the licorice ones or like...
I can see Beatrice liking those though.
Yeah, to be fair, I think she would.
She's my soulmate, so I think you should take licorice, any type of licorice. Maybe the licorice torpedoes, you know, the ones that are in like the hard candy casing, because then they're
like fruit winders.
I am strongly considering bringing a packet of watermelon Sour Patch Kids and just being like, would you like these? And then if she doesn't take them, I can eat them in the car in the White Hall.
I think she would enjoy that. Yeah.
They're so good. I think that's it. I mean, I don't think I have anything else to say other than, you know, fuck the IRFU, but Yeah, that's
I would just like to say that last week a fan presented Beatrice Rigoni with a mini Lego version of her.
Yes.
And it's a toss-up for the greatest thing I've ever seen between the mini figure itself and Beatrice's reaction to,
yeah. to the figure. Big time.
It brought me real joy this week, and I suggest you all follow Beatrice on Instagram so you can get
I need a Lego Rigoni.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, should we all sell them
like mainstream?
Yeah.
They definitely should. I live in the country of Lego. I actually live down the road from Legoland. I'm going to go down and make a petition.
Bang on the door. Yeah. Like, excuse me.
Get a
range. Can we get female rugby superstars?
In my, like, my Danish is slightly better than my French. I'm just going to bang on the door. Like,
can we get a Lego Pauline Bordeaux while we're there?
Could they do the braids? I feel like the braids would be really difficult to achieve out of Lego. Yeah. But
I'll do some research.
Because one time I saw a picture of her without the braids and I was like, that's a different person. I actually just do not know this.
Actually,
one.
I'm like, unemployed right now, and the biggest employer in this country is Legoland. I could just apply for a job in Legoland.
Do
and then
it.
Go down and like make
get
all
free
this
Lego.
Yeah.
Like,
okay,
I know,
this is a new goal.
I now understand how people like didn't recognize Superman when he just put his glasses on, because like when I saw Pauline Bordon without the players, I was like, without the braids, I was like, who is this woman standing next to Laura Santos in a newspaper spread about French power couple scrum halves? Like, who is this woman? who's Laura Santos's new wife, and why is it not Pauline Bordon? Like, it was upsetting. Rhiannon and Will, thank you both so much for coming on this Thursday afternoon, because it is actually the middle of the day, to talk about women's rugby. It's always a pleasure.
It really was.
You're welcome. Yeah. I actually enjoy talking about this kind of rugby. And I will say on air, I'm never going to come on and talk about men's rugby ever again. Please and thank you.
Yeah, until the next time I ask you to and you say, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but if it's about men's rugby, I'm just going to say no.
I will, but only for you, Patricia. Like, just as a testament. Nice. Yeah, I will support you in your ongoing requirement to occasionally discuss men's rugby.
But see, Rhiannon is
I dislike men's rugby more than I like you. Sorry, Patricia.
It's fair enough. Most people do. And thanks everyone for listening. And I mean, I'll be here next week. I certainly endeavour to be here next week. Whoever's sitting with me is yet to be determined. Probably Rhiannon and Will. And
I'm going to have sparkly boots and a Lego job by then. So
I'll have a Lego Rigoni by then.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.